Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations. Today is Friday, February 28th, 2020, and I am Dave Hamilton sitting in for Kelly Gaumont here on this lovely Friday. Thankfully, it's not just me. In fact, I have two guests today. Charlotte Henry, thank you for joining me.
Hello, hello. Happy Friday evening where I am. Friday. Nice to be joining you from the future.
From the future. You are always in the future, Charlotte. That's why we love you here. It's great. And Brian Chaffin, thanks for being here as well, my friend.
Indeed, I am in the past, at least relative to you, Dave.
That is correct. That's right. The weird thing is we're talking about temporal shifting and this whole thing. When people hear this, it will all be in the past or the future, and I'm not quite sure. In fact, I'm definitely not an expert at that because I'm a human and our minds are too feeble to really comprehend time. So instead, let's talk about something we can at least speculate about. Earlier this week, we published a story about Apple reportedly planning an iPad keyboard with a trackpad. Brian, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, Dave, when Tim Cook first started prattling on about toaster fridges, I was like, heck yeah, toaster fridges, take that. Microsoft toaster fridge, LOL. Right. Yeah, I was very on board with the official Apple doctrine on toaster fridges, which is that devices should be true to themselves.
Okay.
Right. If you're gonna have a tablet, it should be a tablet. If you're gonna have a laptop, it should be a laptop. And that when you try to have one device doing both of those things, as we saw with Microsoft's early toaster fridges, you get something that deserves to be nicknamed the toaster fridge because it didn't do either of those things well. And that was Apple's point. That was Tim Cook's point on multiple occasions.
Fair.
And what has happened since then is that. This is a crazy thing. I've actually talked to people who use the toaster fridges, who use these tablets and laptops that can convert into a tablet and back and forth. And I've actually talked to them about using them. And it turns out they love them. And it turns out that like kids it's in the education space, for instance, like kids will reach out to touch laptop displays while they're working on them just naturally.
Well, that's
just very, very naturally. They'll do that. And of course, if it's a MacBook product, that didn't do anything except for get a fingerprint on it.
Right. But that's the interesting part is we now, you know, we talk about a world where mobile first, right? There's that's mm-hmm. a thing that we say and it means a lot of different things. But what it also means is that a lot of people's introduction to computers are through what we consider mobile devices, like an iPhone or it's some sort of touchscreen type thing. It makes sense to keep that going. Charlotte, what do you think about all this mayhem?
So when we first discussed this, when we were kind of plotting out what we fancied discussing on the show and whatever, my initial reaction was, oh, cool, I'd really like that. Now, for some context, I use my iPad a lot for writing, and as I've reviewed on the site, I bought a case that came with a detachable keyboard because I wanted to be able to write properly on it. I didn't want to use the on-screen keyboard. I wanted a proper, nice, clicky-clacky keyboard.
Sure.
And then I thought a little bit more about it, and I really went off the idea because the thing I... So, for example, you, when I was asking what keyboards and cases I should get, you recommended the Bridge keyboard. A couple of people put it to me. They said, listen, this is a fantastic keyboard. It's a brilliantly put together product. It's a fantastic case. Everyone loves Bridge. And they do. And they are great, great products. And the only reason I didn't choose to get one of those is because I felt it turned my iPad into a laptop. You know, it's...
Heaven forbid.
Right. It's a slightly heavy duty keyboard and that's the thing lots of people love about it, right? But it's the thing I didn't want. And so having a touch pad or touch bar on it feels like it's doing the same. Like Apple makes laptops. I use a tablet in a different way, and I'm not sure they should be kind of mixed and matched.
So I have an opinion on this, because I...
Really?
Brian, do you use a Bridge keyboard at all? Is that a thing? Okay.
It's funny, Dave, because and I'm going to answer the question before you actually get to your point. I tend to use my tablet, my iPad Pro, as a tablet. And when I want to go sit at a computer, when I want to do computing work, when I want to type a lot, I go to a computer.
Right. I'm very similar.
But I don't think I think that's in part because the iPad is an imperfect text entry vehicle.
Sure.
So that's my interjection.
For sure. Yeah. For me, when I got that Bridge keyboard for the first time, you're absolutely right, Charlotte. It fundamentally changes the way I can interact with the iPad. It doesn't force me to interact in a different way, but it opens up this whole extra world. And because the Bridge keyboard, there's lots of them. I know we keep referring to the Bridge one. It really does, the way the hinges work and the way that it's metal and all of that really kind of integrates fairly seamlessly with the design, and therefore makes it feel more like a laptop than some sort of flimsy keyboard, like, for example, Apple's Smart Keyboard does. But it really changes the nature of the iPad in a almost fundamental way. I use that device very, very differently with the Bridge keyboard on than I do when I, take that off and just put, say, a Folio case on or something like that. So depending on your use case, I have heard nothing here that I disagree with, if that makes any sense.
Right. Depending, even though we're putting two different kind of opposing views, it's interesting.
Correct.
I mean, I have to say there are some moments when I use the iPad if I'm sitting somewhere doing more heavy duty writing, which is really, the 2019 iPads are really capable of doing that. Like, they're heavy duty machines now. They're not just for web browsing and email. You can do serious production work on them if you so need to. But so there are occasions where I think, I'd love my touchpad. Instead of touching the screen when you've got a keyboard, which kind of feels a bit awkward sometimes, you think, yeah, I'd love it. It would help me select things, copy, paste, select. Those kind of things it would be useful for. I get that. But there's other times where I take away the keyboard, flip it round, and I love that it's a different kind of device. And I worry with if you start integrating cases like that in it from Apple, you, as you both are saying, kind of fundamentally change what the iPad is.
Yeah, and that would actually be a good thing, fundamentally changing it, if it's building on it. I would take my iPad to a coffee shop and type, especially when I was working on something like fiction, as opposed to TMO work, which really, quite frankly, often requires multiple apps, including a thousand tabs and things like that, right?
Yeah.
If I had a good keyboard and it had a pointing device that made sense and worked well and was integrated with iPad OS and helped me making it more of a multitasking device, I would probably start using my iPad more in those situations.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's very few circumstances that I've come up against where what I have now with the iPad, i.e. a detachable keyboard and the screen and a stylus if needed, where that none of that is sufficient. But yeah, you're right. I often have different apps and research and those kind of things open, and perhaps a touchpad would use that. Now, just out of interest, is there any reasons, because that you can't use a magic touchpad or magic mouse or one of those type things, the Apple Bluetooth devices, with an iPad now, if you're so desperate for a touch device?
That does not work in iPad OS 13, correct, Brian?
Which I didn't follow the question.
So can you use an Apple Magic trackpad? So an Apple Bluetooth trackpad, for example, on an iPad now. There is no functionality in iPad OS 13 that allows you to do this, correct?
I do not.
I don't think so.
I don't
know. I don't
so,
either.
But I've got something tickling the back of my head.
Well, what might be tickling the back of your head is at CES, I got to test out the new From Bridge. So here they are, you know, the stars of the show here. Their new, and I don't remember the name, so I'm not even going to try and remember it. But their new keyboard has a trackpad on it.
Yes, I've seen this.
Yeah, and I used it. It uses the accessibility dot. So you turn that accessibility dot that you can put anywhere on the screen with the iPad when you go into accessibility and turn it on, and you can do it on your phone too. Well, the trackpad leverages that and actually moves that dot around with the trackpad, and it becomes your mouse cursor. And
you can use trackpads and mice with this.
You can. With yes. iPadOS 13. Okay. All right.
Correct.
Yeah. So, like, this is definitely coming. Apple's definitely going to make you an iPad keyboard with a trackpad. Yeah.
I know we're running out of time on this topic, Dave, but I've got one more point. I think it's very salient. It's been years since Tim Cook has denigrated the 8 toaster fridge. It's been years.
Yep.
And that, to me, says everything Tim says is incredibly careful.
Yes.
That's very true. Deliberate. Yeah. He's the most deliberate speaker in the world. He's one of the most deliberate speakers anywhere. And
this is true.
If he stopped denigrating it, just like he stopped denigrating the face being the place for wearable computing, I believe it's because Apple is working on that stuff.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Oh, and Andrew's own piece noted, Andrew is the one who covered this for us originally, but he noted that Apple has... the information, I guess, sourced one person that said that Apple has been experimenting with an iPad trackpad for years.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And we already have we have touch bars, don't we, on MacBook Pros now? So
we do. And it's all in the name of efficiency and making these devices and our computers in general do the things that we want to do, which is a perfect segue into our sponsor for today, which is Zapier at Zapier.com/TDO. Zapier allows you to automate your work. I know that's a very generic thing to say. I'm going to say something else generic. It, to me, is the glue that ties all of the various services and things that I use together. Now, specifically, what do you mean by that? For example, we use Slack right here at TMO, and we use it to communicate, but we also have some things that auto-populate into Slack. For example, every day our Google Hangouts meeting, the URL for that populates happily into Slack a few minutes before we're all supposed to join the meeting. So boom, it's right there. How does that happen? It happens with Zapier, because with Zapier, I can set up a timed action that feeds a specific URL into Slack, and then boom, it's right there, right when we want it, ties these things together. For our Mac Geek Gab podcast, we have premium listeners that contribute directly, and I like to thank them during the show. Well, what I used to do was I would go into our e-commerce system, and I would one by one pull out the name and city from which each of these people were from, and I would put it into a Google Sheet, and then I would read from the Google Sheet during the show. I've been a Zapier user for years, and I'm embarrassed to admit that it was only about 6 months ago that I finally thought, hey, I could automate that with Zapier, because Zapier can read from our e-commerce system. It's built to work with so many different things, and it can definitely work with Google Sheets. So now, anytime a new order comes in, it automatically pulls the data from our e-commerce system, fills exactly the fields that I want into the Google Sheet, and boom, it's all done for me, automated, no errors, and no time spent by me. That's the best part, is that it's easy to build the exact solution you need in minutes without writing code or asking a developer for help. And it gets even better. Right now, you can save because you can go to Zapier.com/TDO for your 14-day trial. But you got to go to our special link, Zapier.com/TDO. It's now through the end of the month. Right. Next month. Zapier, Zapier.com/TDO for your 14-day trial for free. Go check it out. Zapier.com/TDO. And our thanks to Zapier for sponsoring this episode and doing what they do. All right. Next up, earlier this week, Apple gave developers that want to sell or distribute their apps in China a deadline where they have to comply with Chinese censorship laws. Charlotte, can you tell us a little bit about what this is here?
Yeah, so it's very specific, actually. It's about developers who develop games distributed through the app store that you either charge for the game outright or there are in-app purchases.
Okay, so financial transaction of some sort has to be baked into the game.
Correct.
Okay.
And it has to be being obviously distributed in the app store in China. If you're just selling your product in the US or the UK or Europe or whatever, this is not an issue. It's not a global edict. And the Chinese government haven't gone that far just yet. But basically, those... But yeah, it requires a license. This law came in 2016, I believe, and Apple has only now finally said, okay, if you don't send us the license number by this date, we have to pull your app.
Interesting.
Well, okay. It is interesting. I also find it slightly uncomfortable making, because it's not just a kind of tax thing or whatever, you know, which, fair enough, you're selling stuff in a country, the relevant authorities need to know that.
Sure.
The license number is issued directly from one of the units of the government involved in censorship.
Yeah. Tim Cook has said many times that he feels it's better to be in a market like China than it is to not be in that market. That basically Apple can do more good by being there, by having a voice, than it can by not being there in the first place. He said that many times. But when China has been killing Apple with, you know, a million tiny little cuts, at what point does that stop being true? At what point does Apple sacrifice and compromise so many of its supposed convictions, especially in regards to privacy?
Yeah, where is Apple's voice here? That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to play devil's advocate slightly. I'm going to kind of cite my inner Tim Cook for a moment. I'm now Tim Cook. Can't you tell? He would, I assume, argue that they've put this off for as long as possible. It's a huge market for the developers who are supported via the App Store, and therefore they kind of have to play the game. I suspect that would be something, you know, around Apple's argument, right? I don't think that's too an unreasonable assumption. I'm kind of leaning towards what Brian's saying, actually. I think suddenly a lot of the products in China, a lot of the product requirements from China are really chipping away at what we think Apple is, or indeed what it should be. I mean, we noticed this week, for example, in the wake of this horrible, horrible coronavirus outbreak, wasn't a game pulled from China already, the game The Plague? I'm assuming those two things are not coincidental, right?
Right.
So we're starting to see these little things that I would argue are opposed to the values Apple keeps telling us they have.
So let me interject there again. I know we're running out of time. Shareholder proposal. Shareholder proposal number 3, which was the 6th thing to actually vote on, was from the organization Some of Us, a shareholder activist organization. And that proposal called on Apple to uphold protections of privacy in China. Now, here's the interesting thing about it. It was voted down. Apple advised its shareholders to vote against the proposal. Some of Us was able to get it onto the market, and into the proceedings in the first place because Apple's bylaws allow that. But here's the thing. It was 40.6% for and 59.4% against. That is a really high percentage in favor of a proposal that Apple management was arguing
against.
That's
very interesting.
Really high. Like most of the time, these things are like, 80-20 at best. you know, and they're often like, you know, 90 point X or 90 above 90% of opposed and, you know, just a very small percentage for. I was shocked at Apple shareholders who, you know, motivated by money, by theory, 40% of them said that that they wanted Apple to uphold their principles of privacy in the Chinese market, which would essentially mean that Apple would have to pull out of the Chinese market.
Fascinating. Well, that's all we have time for today. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man. Thanks for co-hosting today. Good to be here.
My pleasure. Charlotte.
Our guest hosting.
Of course. Charlotte, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Happy weekend, guys.
Happy weekend. And we, in some capacity, will see you on Monday.